I'm speaking with Christine Ferris, a professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies within the Georgetown University Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. Previously, she served as a political officer to the United Nations Assistant Mission to Afghanistan in Kabul and as a senior research associate in the United States Institute for Peace's Center for Conflict Analysis and Prevention. She's also a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christine Fair.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And clearly this is big news that Osama bin Laden's been killed by a U.S. Special Operations team right within a mile or so of Pakistan's equivalent of West Point. But a lot of it doesn't make any sense, particularly not informing anybody in Pakistan. Do you think that the U.S. is saying this in order for the Pakistanis to save face and not have the backlash that they might have expected?
Well, I think that's probably fair. I mean, they've been surprisingly quiet. And I think partly they're trying to figure out how they're going to respond to this. I mean, if the worst case scenario, looking competent and inept, right? Or the other extreme, they look like they're actually complicit. So there's really not, there are not a lot of good options for Pakistan in this.
So given, though, that it was so close to the capital in an area that's where a lot of senior military people retire, one would have thought if they wanted to deflect blame to the Americans, then they wouldn't have allowed this thing to happen so close. Or if they were protecting him, they would have put him on the border or somewhere. That's the part that I don't understand.
But actually, Ian, all of these al-Qaeda operatives have been caught in Pakistan cities, right? They've not been caught in the tribal areas. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was caught in Karachi. Faraj Alivi was caught in Mansehra, which is a town which is very similar to Abbottabad in a lot of respects. A lot of retired military people there, lots of militant training camps there, a lot of forests that are reserved for, they're restricted for government use only. So it's not really a surprise that he was hiding in open sight because most of these guys have been. What is so surprising about this is that he had virtually no security detail, right? It was just the courier, his wife, in this, you know, incredibly bizarre compound a mile or so away from the Pakistan Military Academy. That's what's bizarre, is where he was hiding in plain sight, not that he was hiding in plain sight.
And it's inconceivable, surely, that somebody within the intelligence service of Pakistan didn't know. I mean, don't they know where everybody is in that country?
You know, I mean, first of all, it's Pakistan, so anything is conceivable. But hearkening back to something that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said on May 11th, 2010, when she was in Pakistan, you may recall she was very clear when she said that it is our belief that someone in the Pakistan government, maybe not at the highest levels, but nonetheless someone knows where bin Laden is, and they're not being forthcoming about it. And I remember she took a lot of heat for saying that. Many Pakistanis hollered up and down about it. But in the end, she was absolutely right.
So do you think, what kind of an arrangement would they have made? I mean, our previous guest suggested that it was just impossible, having worked with special forces, that they would have gone in and made those risks of effectively invading a country's sovereignty.
But, Ian, we've had this conversation for years now, right? I remember the very first time you had me on your show right after the very first special operations raid into Fatah.
Right.
So in some sense, this is Groundhog Day. You know, we've been doing it. We have done it. And this is consistent with our policy that when we get actionable intelligence that a high-value target is there, we're going to act on it unilaterally. And that's just the way it is. And we've been doing it. This isn't the first time we've done it. This is just the first time that we've done it so spectacularly well within Pakistan. Now, that being said, we don't really know the degree to which the Pakistanis were complicit in the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed arrest. What has been different is in those previous engagements, there was a very big effort to make Pakistan look like a partner in its execution. Now, it's not clear here whether, we just don't know whether or not Pakistan was a partner. I suspect, well, I don't want to speculate. But there's really just two options, right? Either Pakistan helped provide intelligence that led to his capture, or they were actively supporting him, or different elements were actually doing both. But we've been doing this. There's nothing new about this.
Well, the last time we spoke was about the possibility of spy wars between the ISI and the CIA.
Well, that's another good example. What was Raymond Davis doing? Operating unilaterally to protect our interests, to do things that they knew the ISI wouldn't.
And that marine base near there, Ghazi, do you know what the extent of the Marines' activity there? That surely would be circumscribed by their hosts. In other words, they didn't launch the attack out of that base that's nearby, I don't think.
No, my understanding was that it was launched out of Jalalabad.
Right. So just in closing then, Chris Fair, relations couldn't get worse, I guess, between the U.S. government and the militaries and intelligence services of the two countries, but they could get better. What's your final thoughts on that?
Well, like I said, you know, if it turns out that Pakistan had provided critical intelligence that led to bin Laden's capture, this will be a positive turning point in our relationship, a much-needed positive turning point. However, if it is, as I fear, that Pakistan was actually part of the concealment program, as they say, defecation will hit the rotary oscillator.
Well, if that's the case, then you can take this whole thing further, surely, that maybe they've known about it all along. They may have even known about 9/11. I mean, there's no limit to the
well, yeah, how perfidious it is. Once you sort of concede that ground, the questions that you start asking and you begin folding back the layers of the onion of questions, you get yourself to a really nasty place. So, like I said, I don't feel comfortable speculating about that. You know, there's just enough questions right now that really need some urgent answering, leave alone what was or was not known on September 9th.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here in Los Angeles.
Thank you, Ian. Have a fabulous day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello again. I'm Ian Masters. I've just been speaking with Christine Ferris, professor at the Center for Security Studies within Georgetown University's Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. Previously, she served as a political officer to the United Nations Assistant Mission to Afghanistan in Kabul and as a senior research associate in the United States Institute for Peace's Center for Conflict Analysis and Prevention. She's also a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point.